You and Joe. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Andy Troy Show, where you can sample all the great things New York has to offer. For the next 60 minutes, I'll not only clue you into some great things to do around town, but we'll also chat with some interesting local personalities. Tonight, once again, we go to the mattresses with actors Coffee Cake, Bobby Barr's Jojo the Whale, and Joe Black from the classic mob film, A Bronx Tale. But first, our shameless plugs. For those of you who haven't read my anti-aging book, Living Young, 32 Habits of Ageless People, there's no time like the present. It's always the right time to stay young and get healthy. Also, if you're going to live a long time, you might as well enjoy it. So check out my DVD, The Bedroom Workout for Men, on how to improve men's sexual performance through exercise. Both are available on Amazon.com and my website, AndyTroy.com. Remember that if you bring my book to any of my events, I'll be happy to autograph it for you. Speaking of which, our next event will be our annual vampire-themed Valentine's Day party. Valentine's Day at the Vampire Lounge. The date, Friday, February 10th from 6 to 10 p.m. The location, Taj Lounge, 48 West 21st Street between 5th and 6th Avenues. Admission is free. There'll be free ruby red lip makeovers by Jade DeRue, free massages by Karen Yanko, discounted vampire fangs courtesy of Tom Misfit, and a performance by the world's only lounge-singing vampire, the infamous Baron Misuraca. There'll be lots more surprises, so come join us. The details for this and all my monthly events are on my website, tastingnyc.com. The Andy Troy Show has a fan page on Facebook that contains links to past shows as well as pictures of all our past guests. Check it out by punching the Andy Troy Show into your Facebook browser. If you haven't heard my animal rescue song, Hoping for Another Morning, you can both hear the song and see the video by going to YouTube and punching Hoping for Another Morning into the browser. My good friend and producer, John Anello, a.k.a. Johnny Mandolin, has a CD called La Voce Mia. Order your copy today at johnnymandolin.com or call E. Rossi at 212-226-9254 and they'll hook you up. Finally, sponsors, we want them. If you'd like to promote your goods and or services to our vast listening audience, contact the station or me directly at andyftroy@aol.com. Okay, the gang's all here today, literally. We've got quite a collection of folks. Our old friend Joe Black is supervising in the distance. But some other folks who were very visible in one of my favorite movies, including Jojo the Whale and Coffee Cake, who did time together in the bathroom, as I recall.
Yes, it was a wonderful time, Andy. Thanks for having us. Number one, it was me, Jojo, and Eddie Murch, who's unfortunately not here, but he's a tremendous character. Alistair Shelley Jr., so we got the whole mob here.
This is the gentleman who played Freddie Coffee Cake on the...
No,
Frankie, I'm
That's
sorry.
Freddie Fisher, right. Who's Jojo the Whale.
I have a hard time keeping my Freddies and my Frankie straight. No.
That's all right.
Okay. So, how did you guys end up in this movie? That would be a good question. First of all, Coffee, how did you end up in that?
Well, I grew up at Chaz Palminteri. He was a little older than me, and he went out to California to try to make it in movies, and unfortunately he did well. And he wrote the play for A Bronx Tale, which was originally a 90-minute thing. It took him 6 months to write it. And when I came back here, I said, Chaz, you got to get me in a movie somehow. I mean, we picked each other's brain for years. And he says, well, Dave, you know, Bob wants someone that's really legitimate. So I said, I can get on a bus. And he says, well, no, he says, we'll see. But a month later, he calls me and says, Dave, there's a racetrack scene. Do you think you could do that? I says, I could do that in my sleep. You got to be kidding me. I'm doing that all my life. I could phone that in. And so 2 days later, he called me and said, you know, I think you got the part, but then he wants to meet everybody that has anything to do with the movie. And I went down there, and I was about not to go in. I was so nervous. I said, I'm going to go back home. And the door opened up. I walked in, and I told De Niro, I said, Bob, I got to make the third race at Aqueduct. I'm in a little bit of a hurry. He says, I hope this ain't going to take long. I got things to do. So I took a chance, and I see right away he liked me. And I kept going on with it. And there's just one other thing I have to add. He really liked me. So about 10 minutes into it, Chaz says to him, Bob, I like to use him for the racetrack scene. So De Niro says, you know, I like to use him for coffee cake. And he points toward me. I thought he said, I'm going to send him for coffee and cake. I said to him, I said, wait a second. I thought it was so good over here. I was going to say, yeah, give me the money. I go, what do you want, a Danish?
There was a guy like that in Goodfellas who ended up in The Sopranos. Yeah, Spider.
Oh, Spider. Michael Imperioli, great kid. For that.
Yeah, they sent him for coffee, too. Didn't work out so good for him, as I recall.
Yeah, he's a terrific kid, yeah.
I have to say, you look a lot better than you did in the movie. You're aging very well.
Thanks. Well, it was makeup. Well, the thing is, during the meeting, he kept looking at me, staring at me. I said, what is this guy looking at? I said, I gave him every move I had in the book. Look left, I look right. And then he says, if we do something, will you be here every day? I says, well, I don't know. I can't guarantee you. I may have to put you on hold. I may have things to do. And what I wasn't realizing that he was looking at me with makeup on. The guy who plays the part, Coffee Cat guy, has severe acne. And I didn't realize that at the time. But I know when I walked out that day that something special had happened. And I got to credit also my friend Joe Acavallo here, who played Joe Black in the movie. Because I was about to walk out that day. I was so nervous because this is one of my favorite actors. So I'm going to screw up. But Joe walked in with his two sons. He went for the part of Joe Black. And he came onto the floor and something inspired me. I saw somebody from my own neighborhood and I felt a little secure. And he gave me a smile and that made me go in there. So I credit Joe with a lot of, you know.
Joe was very inspirational, actually.
Yes.
Yes.
Just to see him dead.
And he can sure break a windshield, I'll tell you that.
I happened to be there that day, and I was happy to see Dave, and he heard me, you know, with my pot, and I came out, and he says, how'd you make out? I said, I'm pretty sure I got the pot. They all love me. They love my sons. And I said, you'll be all right. Just calm down. You'll get the pot. And he sure, he got the pot.
You would do a great Sammy the Bull Gravano, I think, if they were to do a movie. You got it down, I think. What do you think? Let's hear from JoJo. JoJo, yeah. How did you end up in this? JoJo the Whale, our fitness model.
Yeah, exactly. I was working as a security in a club in Manhattan called the Rockets.
And not Johnny Rockets, was it?
It was Johnny Rockets, yeah. And then he got sued for using the name, and then he had to change it to Rockets. And it was a real beautiful place to work.
I was there many times.
Oh, cool.
I think you threw me out of that one.
I think so. And all the kids that worked there, they all wanted to be actors and stuff like that, so they used to read the trade papers and stuff like that, and one of the kids that worked there, he came to me and he said, look, Freddie, I said, I'm not interested, you know. He said, but look, they're looking for a guy. You got to be like, you know, over 6 foot, over 300 pounds, blah, blah, blah. You got everything covered. So he said, let me take your picture and send it in. I said, yeah, all right. So he takes the picture, he sends it in. And 2 days later, I get a call, and I think it's the kid fooling around with his girlfriend, you know, and she's telling me, yeah, my name is Robin, I'm Robert De Niro's secretary, he'd like to have lunch with you next week, and I can't do that. She says, what do you mean? I said, well, next Tuesday, I'm having lunch with Marlon Brando. She says, really? I says, yeah, we got this big meeting going, you know. She says, all right, what about, like, Thursday or Friday? I said, no, Thursday, I'm meeting with Al Pacino, and Friday, I made up some other excuse. She said, no, are you kidding me? I said, no, are you kidding me? I said, this kid takes my picture one day, and 2 days later, I'm getting a call from, you know. She says, yeah, they've been looking for this character. He's a hard thing to do. One thing led to another. I go down to see De Niro. Chaz is there. We talk. All right, we come back. And the thing that is so amazing about life is that while I was there, I went back about the sixth time. And you know, I keep telling you, you don't have the part, but, you know, we want to check everything. And about the fifth or sixth time I went back, I met a fellow I used to drive a gypsy cab in Brooklyn with years before that, about 25 years prior to that, and we looked exactly the same. And I walked in the room, and I thought it was a joke, and I said, Tommy, I'm telling you now, if this is a joke, I'm flipping out. And because I can't. He says, what are you here for? I said, well, the kid sent in my picture. I don't know, some kind of part, JoJo the Whale, whatever. And he starts hammering on the desk. I know it. Every time I get this close, and he's, you know, got the inch sign with his fingers. Every time I get out,
they pull me back in.
He says, Jesus takes it away from me. I want to be something. I said, well, if you want, you know, I'm doing pretty good. I'm working in the club. I got a few things going on. You want to take it, you take it. I walk out now. He said, no, let's leave it up to fate. And I did, and I got the part, and it was amazing. It was the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. Everybody should experience that type of thing in their life at least once. It was like, you know, and I met some of the greatest people on Alpha Socelli. We became very good friends. So it was more than just a movie to me. It was like a change in my life at the time. I needed changes. Other people needed changes. Things was happening. And it was like the universe was saying, you know, do this thing. And I did it. And, you know, I wound up like 20 years, best friend Alfred, you know, Joe Black, you know, Dave Coffee Cake. All the other members of the family.
And all the associates who came here from as far as New Jersey.
A lot of barbecues and stuff like that. Yeah, so it was just a very great experience. I didn't do much after that in the movies. I did a few things, and then the fight scene was like horrendous in the movie. And
I love that. That scene in that bar was one of the best scenes ever.
We rehearsed it so
now you can't leave.
Yeah. And that happened to me in life one time. De Niro was like, you know what? De Niro, I know this thing because this happened to me. Like, I was in a bar, we acted stupid. They locked the door, and thank God somebody knew somebody, and we got it squashed. But I could have been one of those bikers with my head split open.
You look like you'd make a good biker.
Yeah. I did have a biker.
Right. Speaking of tough guys, we don't want to leave out Bobby Boz here, who's sitting there looking a little dangerous, who was also. They know me as Bobby Boz. They know me as Momo.
No. Yeah, well, as you can see, this is a cast of characters sitting at this table. And unlike these gentlemen, I just filled out an application to get into the Bronx Tale, and I got hired. Now, anyway, I was hanging around in them days with a dear friend of mine, and his cousin had grown up with Bob De Niro, and they were kids together. And they mentioned the movie one night. We were out and mentioned the movie, and we thought it was a joke. Like, once you come down, Bob's making a movie about the Bronx. The Bronx. Yeah, okay, make us an appointment. He said, and sure enough, a couple of days later, I got a call, and we had to go to Greenwich Street and audition. But it was a joke. We never knew what Greenwich Street was. That's where Bob's office is. And anyway, we went down, my friend and I, and we auditioned. Cold. Never thought about being actors. We're truck drivers. That's what we do. And very, very fortunate, like Freddie said, to go through the process of the auditioning and meeting gentlemen. And it is 20 years, and we're still like a family, this group I'm sitting with at this table. But I'm not going to give you my whole story how I got it, because you heard how it went. But a great experience and very fortunate.
And you should never talk about the family business anyway. So
that's right.
That's kind of exactly.
Do you know that part of that movie was filmed by my house in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn?
Really? Gravesend?
The black neighborhood was my Russian neighborhood.
There you go.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. Where Lilo took that girl on a date.
Lilo, actually.
Yeah, Lilo, is it?
Yeah,
it's
a...
Okay. Well, we're actually going to go to our first commercial break, because the sponsors have given us an offer we can't refuse.
All
literally.
Right.
And we'll be back in a minute.
Yo, this is Fat Elder Cannoli over here, and you are listening to the Chintani Broadcasting Network. High definition digital radio broadcasting to the world.
Hello, my name is Anthony Teresa, owner and producer of Blue Knight Recording Studio in beautiful Orange County, California, just outside Los Angeles. As a guitarist, vocalist, bassist, session player, producer, and engineer, I have either played or recorded on over 400 CD projects. Let me tell you, it's not easy to record your own music. My goal is to help you to be the best you can be behind the mic and in the tracking room. We'll get the best possible sounds from your voice and instruments. Do you need musicians? I've got them. The top session players in Southern California and Los Angeles. Let's make your recording project a reality. You can contact me by phone at 949-338-0293. That's 949-338-0293. Or contact me an email at catduo@earthlink.net. Looking forward to hearing from you. Take care and have a great week.
Hi, this is Andy Troy. Listen to my show on Mondays from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Chintani Broadcasting Network. High definition digital radio broadcasting to the world. I love it when we do plugs for my show on my show. Someday I got to listen to my show. Okay. Now, as I mentioned this to Joe last time he was on the show, you know, unfortunately the star of the movie ended up Lilo with a couple of problems of his own after the fact. He ended up involved, as you know, in the killing of a police officer. Did you guys have any sense that he was the kind of guy who was going to get into any trouble? Did you deal with him much when you were making the movie?
Well, we had to. You know, he was a talented kid, and we all tried to tell him that there's consequences to pay, you know, if you take the movie. And he's a good kid, believe me.
But, yeah, he was just a regular 17-year-old kid.
I mean,
And how can you predict anything like that happening anyway? You know, that's like these guys that turn out to be baby molesters and all that shit. How can you predict something like that? You can't. It's impossible. You know, he's a 17-year-old kid. He got involved with shit that he shouldn't get involved with. I don't know if you can say shit on the thing.
Yeah, but, that's all right.
You know, and it's sort of a very unfortunate thing because he was a very talented kid. And hopefully he'll straighten his life out when he comes out and move on in life, you know. Yeah. Unfortunate things happen. You can't predict. Like, tomorrow, I might read about you on a newspaper. You know,
I can only hope.
You got like
15, I got a press agent out there 15, somewhere.
15, 20 bodies in your basement. God knows what, you know. And then we're going to say, wait, I'm sitting right next to that guy.
What I want to know is why the police cannot accurately...
Are you kidding me or what?
Well, what I want to know is why the police cannot accurately count the number of bodies in my basement.
Well, you know what I mean? You got a good account.
Don't these guys go to school?
Whoever said they could count.
Yeah.
Well, I
like to think police officers count for something.
I believe he was headed for trouble, but not what he barked for. I mean, you get caught in unfortunate situations. The whole thing is here that the cop is in the dead. His family's not going to see him anymore. But, you know, you're going down that road. You can only give someone so much advice. They're young kids. And nobody's apologizing for anybody, but... you know, sometimes you're young, you make mistakes, but this is a hell of a mistake, I gotta tell you. And, you know, he was shot twice, he's doing 10 years. I'm sure the families, the officer's family don't want to hear this, they'll never see him again. But, you know, I don't know what to say. You know, you go back to those times and maybe you put yourself in that position. But, unfortunately, he didn't learn what I said in the paper, the rhyme of the movie. You know, waste of time.
Yeah, that's what. There's nothing more unfortunate than waste of time.
You know, some people can't handle fame at that young age, and I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, it's impossible situation, right?
You can say.
I mean, it happened. It's over. Nobody's forgiven anybody. Like I say, the end result is the cop is dead, and unfortunately, that's you know, the worst thing that happened out of everything.
Now, you and Joe both knew Chaz growing up, but Bobby, what was your dealings with him like? How did you find Chaz to work with? And how did you first meet him, I guess, from auditioning for the movie?
Yes, on my second audition, when I got called in, I had to go to meet Bob De Niro. You know, I auditioned first for a couple of casting ladies, and then I got called back, and I went in the office, and there was Chaz Palminteri. He introduced himself to me. Bob De Niro had come out. He was in the bathroom, I believe. He introduced himself, and that was my first experience with Chaz and Bob De Niro.
Because you were kind of like one of his henchmen in the, like his right-hand man in the movie, right? So you probably dealt with him a lot.
Absolutely. Perfect gentleman. He helped you. He helped you along the way. He never came off, because we were all regular guys. I speak for myself, my first time acting. He didn't make you feel nervous. He didn't come with a star power type of thing. Equal keel, equal all the way. Yeah. Made it real comfortable to work.
Seems to have a good reputation from everything I've heard.
He's got a lot of insight. He's very in tune with what's happening. You know, like one day on the set, I think it was the scene that I had to do where Lilo gets out of the car and I tell him that the Molignon bro was just there. And I De Niro made me do it over about four or five times, six times. The next day on the set, and I didn't understand what was happening, you know, because I was caught up in a lot of different things back then. I was eating like out of control and all this other. And Chaz pulled me on the side. He says, let me explain something to you. He says, you don't have to play the fat guy. And I didn't understand what he was talking about. He says, yeah, every neighborhood has like a fat guy, a tough guy, this guy, that guy. You don't have to play that. That's something that's locked in. And if you get locked into that, and 6 years later, it took me 6 years to understand what he was talking about. When I ballooned to 750 pounds and had 6 months to live, when I realized what he was talking about, that you could change. You don't have to be. And I went from 750 pounds down to 360 pounds in 12 months. Well, I became a vegetarian. I ate, you know, all organic stuff. I gave up dairy and this and that. And that's when I realized how intelligent this man was. And it came all from what his father told him about wasted talent. Mm. And it also got into other people's lives and changed so many people's lives, that movie, that you couldn't imagine. Mm. The roads that the way people were heading and where they were heading, we know because we're intimate. We know everything about everybody. And we know. So there's a power and a force there. It's not just a regular movie. When he talks about wasted talent and the things that were changed in my life, that changed in other people's life, trickled down. So you can't concentrate on the one thing that happened with the Lilo thing. There's other stories out there. Like if it wasn't for Chaz Palminteri and Alfred Sorcelli called me every day, one day at a time. Remember Al?
Every day.
Every day he used to call me when I told him, Al, I'm dying. They gave me 6 months. I'm urinating blood. I got congestive heart failure. I got liver failure, kidney failure. The doctors don't know what to do. I don't know. Every day he called me. How we doing? Jojo, how we doing, Freddie? How we doing? John Allen, yeah, I had this today, I had that. And he stuck by me, and you know, it all sparked from this play, this thing that Chaz put out there.
See, Chaz.
By the way, somebody just texted in. Good for you. Good job losing weight. So,
thank you.
But Andy, Chaz, yeah. You know, Chaz. When I was a kid, was a little. He was a little younger than me, but you could tell he had something special. And we had a certain connection between us. But I said, this kid is so, I mean, he was so humorous, so smart. I thought his future would be in comedy. That he was such a funny kid and told stories that were incredible. And I knew he was destined, of course, not for what turned out to be for him. That who can visualize that? It's almost impossible. But one quick story, we went down to see the movie Bang the Drum Slowly.
That was De Niro, right?
De Niro, he played a Southern catcher, and the same movie was Mean Streets. So we went to see Bang the Drum Slowly, and we said, this guy is going to be great. So as we're coming out, the guy says, you know, there's a 3 o'clock movie called Mean Streets. So we went to see that movie too, and as we're going home, we're saying, what a tremendous actor this guy is going to be. It's the first movies that we ever seen him in. And who would think that 16 years later, Chaz would be doing a play about his father's life being played by this actor we just saw who was great. I mean, it's just impossible to believe what the movie did. Like Al and Joe and, I mean, me and Joe Black know each other, but I never would have met JoJo, I never would have met Al. So our lives came together. So the movie brings people together. It has forces that, you know, it's just incredible.
Talk about people you never would have expected. Harvey Keitel, I think, was in Mean Streets.
Yes, he played the part that Scorsese wanted to play Johnny Boy, and he picked the name for the other part. Go ahead.
He was a court reporter in my mother's office, by the way. Harvey Keitel.
We met him at the premiere. He was a wonderful guy. He was a really sweet guy. I'm sorry.
No, that's good. But like Fred was saying, you know, when you say Bronx Tale, a mob movie, I don't take it as a mob movie. I just take it as a movie. There's so many ways you can take it.
Right.
It's just about life. There's so many different messages. Like I have 4 sons. I make my sons watch the movie Wasted Talent. The choices you make. Watch your life get flushed down the toilet. Exactly.
Well, there was some great philosophy in that movie.
And by the way, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Chaz, he goes to different colleges, and they break that movie down in film schools. They critique that movie on your take of it, mob movie, father and son, you know, just however you want to break it down, because there's so many different messages that come from
the
racial issue. And like Fred said, and Dave and Joe Black, it brought all guys from different walks of life together. And 20 years we're still together, and it's just amazing what this movie has done. How kids, my sons, they weren't even born. They're friends. My greatest movie. I love them. They weren't even born. This is a movie that will live on because of the message that it sends. That's just my take.
I love the car test. That was like my favorite thing.
that's
a great thing. You date an Italian girl, she opens the door and hands you a sandwich. That's why, you know, you got to know who to go hang out with. But, that was that. And the thing with the $20 was great, too.
Right.
You know, to me, the real point of the movie was this guy whose father was so concerned that this local Don was going to mess up his life, and all the guy really wanted was what was best for him. And that's what De Niro realized in the end, of course.
Yeah.
Well, I pick up, I grew up in the neighborhood, Chaz, and his father was so similar to the movie. His father was such a quiet, dignified guy, and he was a bus driver, but he was very quiet, and he used to be trained boxers, but he was a very silent guy. And I think Chaz used to tell me, he used to give me money to go do things. He had nothing in his pocket. His mother used to say, you know, your father gave you your last $5, and he was, you know, he was just a good guy. And I think the movie portrayed his father well. It was Lorenzo, Larry. So there's so much, you know, connected with the movie that it could have been done so many times, but it was done this time, and we were fortunate for it.
How were those bikers to work with?
Very good. They were unbelievable.
I saw one of them in a Steven Seagal movie.
Yeah.
He's an actor. That fellow was an, I forget his name.
Sonny. I think it's Sonny.
Yeah, he was a professional actor, but those other gentlemen, they were real, you know, biker fellas.
Yeah.
And, great guys, by the way. Still friends with them to today.
Really? Yeah. Okay, that's cool. Now,
the lead guy, Red, was the butt. Unfortunately, he passed away shortly after that.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
Hit by a bus, I think.
And they were just total gentlemen. I mean, they understood the process that was going on, and they didn't overreact where they could have overreacted. It was just that they knew their place and they handled it well, and everybody got along. Like, I didn't see them as bikers; you see them as fellow actors.
Still friends with them, like I said. Yeah. Even those guys to today, 20 years.
Yeah, Butchie.
We're all still friends.
Get them on. I'd like to have some Hell's Angels on the show. I had the guys from Rescue Inc. on, seven of them. They're a bunch of like bodybuilder bikers who rescue animals.
Oh, cool. Oh, I see that.
They have a TV show.
Yeah.
Give a shout out to them.
Very nice.
Now, how do you guys feel about, you know, the history? Historically, the mob was always, okay, we're going to throw this out there and come back to it. They were always portrayed as, they didn't really get into their life on TV. And now you've got shows like Growing Up Gotti and things like that. And the things seem to be much more out in the open than they were. So I'd like to talk about that a little bit and get because I'm sure you guys knew some tough guys growing up.
I'm German, man. I know.
Are you?
Yeah. Freddie Fisher. What do you think that is?
That's a front.
They were afraid.
That's an alias.
Yeah.
They were afraid I wasn't going to understand the whole situation. But I, you know, anybody that grew up in an Italian neighborhood knows, you know, the whole situation, how it is. And
so are you surprised that that stuff is so out in the open now? Because that really was not discussed. You wouldn't expect, to, like, mob wives to be on TV.
Well, I'm not crazy about it. I think it's really, I mean, to prostitute yourself the way they do, or this idiots on the Jersey Shore, which I can't stomach.
Well, that's, I mean, that's all
a lot
other
of
story.
I mean, we played their characters, but not the mob movie, but the mob wives in reality, and, my father, we came here from Italy. There's a lot of beautiful Italian people, work hard and everything. Fortunately, these are the people that get the notoriety. It's really sad.
Yeah, it's like in any.
I mean, I think people should, they realize that 90% of the people like this way. I mean, it makes me cringe when I see mob wives on TV. Jersey Shore, I mean, I want to puke when I see them. It's, so we play mobs, but we're hard. Alan's a hard line. He's got four boys.
I mean,
we're all JoJo's been a
but I see Joe Black has a Snooki T-shirt on underneath that sweater.
Yeah, but we're gonna take it off him as soon as the show's over. I mean, JoJo and Al are gonna take it off him, not me. Let me retract that. JoJo and Al, because nobody takes anything of Joe Black.
You're the consigliere, aren't you, Coffee?
No.
Yeah,
no, I mean, I'm not a tough guy, but especially with the guy like, you know, when I'm like that. I let JoJo and Al.
Joe looks like a tough fellow. Although Al looks a little intimidating as well.
We could handle ourselves.
Well, Al's
that's
a great
show. Sure.
Al has four boys. I mean, you think about he has to go to games. Every time you call him, I'm at a game. He has to.
Okay. The only person tougher than you guys, our engineer Betty, is telling me we have to go to commercial break. So
okay.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Cent'anni Broadcasting Network.
High definition digital stereo
broadcasting to the world. Would you like to know what's going on in the Italian-American community and stay in touch, even if you don't live in Little Italy? There's a way to do it. There's a great newspaper out called GIA, the Giornale Italo-Americano. This newspaper is distributed nationally and comes out weekly, and you can subscribe by going to their website at www.giamondo.com, that's GIAMONDO.com, or call 718-592-2196. Check out GIA for all your information on what's happening in the Italian-American community. It's published in both Italian and English. It's a great way to read and follow up and practice your Italian as well. Check out GIA on the internet at www.giamondo.com. GIA newspaper, the Italian-American newspaper for today.
Hi, this is Robbie Russell from the Garage Mania Show.
This is Nurse Cheryl.
Listen to Garage Mania Radio on the
Shitani Broadcasting Network.
High definition digital audio. Broadcasting
to the world!
Okay, we're back with my favorite tough guys. And coffee cake, because you can't have a nice Italian dinner in Umberto's without having some coffee cake.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, there's a place, Gino's in the Bronx, where Chaz got married in 1992. They had on the menu Frankie's Coffee Cake, Eddie's Mush. Huh. So that was really a lot of fun. And 10 years ago, we had our anniversary there with Al and Jojo. It was a great time. Now it's an IHOP, so you figure it out.
Now, we're back.
We like to do a song.
We took a brief commercial break.
We like to do a song that we do once in a while as a doo-wop group from the Bronx Tales.
Okay, let me assure people that that was a technical problem. I was not bumped off by Joe Black.
No.
Did you bring your bat, Joe?
My bat is home. It's signed and autographed.
Okay.
To the showcase.
Very good. Well, we are in fact back. We did a brief outage here.
So we're going to do a little song. Is that okay with you, Andy?
So Coffee Cake wants to regale us with a tune.
Yes, well, not me.
You will be accompanied
alone,
by the other gentleman.
Okay, ready, guys?
Okay. First, is there a name for this group is what
yes.
I want to know.
Well, the Bronx Tellers.
Jojo and the Wellers.
Okay. I've heard of them.
Yes. Okay. I sit in my room looking out at the rain. My tears are like crystals, they cover my window pane. I know you'll never forgive me, dear, for running out on you. Oh, how I long to do the things we used to do. I'm lonely and I'm blue, but I'll try to get along without you. Teardrops, I try to gain faith, hope, and charity. Lord only knows the girl who will love me. Oh, if we only could start over. Okay, that's pretty good. I think we better stop
there.
And we're
available for barbecues.
Jojo and the Wailers on TutaniBroadcasting.com. Where is your next performance, by the way?
NBC, what is that? The Rainbow Room? Yeah, we'll be performing the second to
the Andy Troy Show.
I wish I had you guys at my bar mitzvah, I'll tell you that. You guys would have liked my bar mitzvah. There were no Jews. It was all my father's army friends.
Well, let's do it again. Yeah.
And they actually ran out of the unlimited liquor. That's actually a true story. They gave us unlimited liquor for a certain price, and they ran out.
Wow. You don't want to do that with us. I think you'd definitely come on a short end. I think. Before we go on, Andy, Eddie Mush, I know Joe Black talked about him the time before, but he was such a tremendous character. I mean, I credit Eddie for me getting in the movie because He went down for a pot, and Chaz called me and says, you know what, Bob De Niro wants to meet Eddie Mush. So De Niro says to Chaz, is this guy still alive? He's still alive. He says, yeah, he's on the corner meeting the racing form. He said, bring him in. Eddie went in, knocked everybody out. Chaz called me and he said, Dave, you're not going to believe this. Eddie got the pot. So this is 2 weeks before I went in. So I never would have went in with the bravado that I did, not knowing that Eddie had he liked Eddie before that. Because I figure I'm a character like Eddie, not to Eddie's ever. Nobody's like Eddie anymore. So he was one of a kind in the world.
Unbelievable.
So I always credit him, because when I went in that day, I never would have went in and said to De Niro, oh, yeah, I got to make a third race of that. But when I went in, I was thinking of Eddie. And JoJo was there. And I said, if he likes Eddie, he'll like me. So, Eddie, wherever you are, we love you.
God rest his soul.
Yeah, tremendous character. And also Danny KO and Al. When I was on the corner getting beat up, I was so nervous, and they would say break, and I'd look on the side. Al was off camera with Danny KO. They were off camera, and they kept giving me the encouraging sign, you know. They were off. They were saying, good, you're doing good, you know. And that propelled me. So I couldn't wait for the next scene, because I says, hey, these guys are really encouraging me, which is what we all try to do together, you know. We never knew each other. We came to this place in the world, which was tremendous, and we did something that nobody will ever take away from us. That's it.
All right. Now, well, you said you were beaten up on the corner. I don't really remember that. I remember Chaz pushing you around a little
bit.
Yeah,
well, that was slap, close yeah. to beating
that
up.
That was geez, beat that up was light.
Yeah. Are
you kidding me?
Well,
I don't remember the bars.
I was beaten up, no. I was used to that happen to me, but these guys won't cover me.
So now you guys had some sort of, get together for the whole bunch of you?
Yeah, it was about 10 years ago, and it was great. And all the guys, Chaz came there too. It was a nice little, in fact, the 20th thing is coming up this year. August the 31st, 2012 will be the 20th anniversary. So we're trying to put something together. And, it seems like it was two or three years ago. I can't believe it's exactly 20. It's impossible to be 20 years. But we all met that day. We were all in the same position. None of us had really ever acted. So I think we all drew from each other. Encouragement, because I said, yeah, he's never been there. Look how good he's doing. You know? I remember Al coming off the set one day. He says, Al, you finished? He said, we didn't even begin yet. And JoJo was great. So we all, the dice scene. Guys, old guys from my neighborhood said they don't give up nothing. You know, the sun was better, the moon was better, this was better, everything was better. But they said that crap scene, you guys nailed it. And that to me was, that we did well when they give it up to you.
Now, a couple of guys in the movie have done some other interesting things. For example, Momo there, you were not only a star of A Bronx Tale, but you were featured as well in Analyze This and Analyze That. So for a guy who's not really into the mob stuff, they seem to keep pulling you back in there.
Well, I have that kind of face, and I wasn't a star, so please don't say that. But
you fired a couple of shots.
Yeah, I fired a shot here or there.
You played a cop.
I play cops. I play lawyers.
Did you?
Oh yeah.
Quite a career you have developed. Yeah.
Forklift operator.
There you go.
You can't say forklift on the radio.
Oh, we can't say forklift.
Spoon lift.
They're spoon lift.
That's right. Yes. No, we actually are not FCC regulated, so
okay.
It's perfectly made for you guys.
Right.
How did you end up in those movies? Just because you were connected with De Niro and Chaz?
Well, very fortunate. You know, just you start to audition, you get a little fire, you read the trade papers, you hear things through the grapevine, they're doing this movie. You send your picture in and you hope the phone rings. It did a few times for me. Very, very fortunate. I've done some commercials. Did a real funny commercial over in Europe for Heinz Mayo, but... Uncle Freddy. That was a little controversial, that commercial.
Really? Tell us. We like controversy.
Oh, that was very controversial. Matter of fact, they made the Riley Factor. That's how controversial it was.
You did a commercial about mayo.
In London, England. It was only supposed to be in the UK. And I get a phone call from a friend of mine, Paulie, up in the Bronx. He says, Al, listen. He says, I just got a call from Joey out in Arizona. He saw you kissing a guy on TV.
I says, Other people saw that too?
Yeah, he said, and your point. So nobody saw the commercial at that point. But the ending is where I have a kiss with a fella. And it's actually, you can go to YouTube and type in Heinz Mayo, and you could see it. And Riley made it. It made it to Riley, and are they promoting homosexuality? It was a mayonnaise commercial, you know, and then there was a lot of issues with that in Europe and all, but that was a lot of fun.
Homosexuality should not be promoted. It should work its way up through the ranks like everyone else.
That's what I say.
Exactly.
It's snowing out there.
Okay.
Can you believe it's snowing out there?
Well, Andy, we hear it snowing outside.
Yeah, actually,
that's
snowing outside.
Exciting news flash.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas just like
Coffee Cake is a frustrated singer, I think. Joe Black wants to get a microphone.
Andy, you have to get Sony and me, Al, and Joe, and can maybe get a commercial out of that song.
You want me to hook you guys up?
Yeah.
I've had a lot of rock stars on this show, by the way.
Well, rock star, I mean, we give a great blend. Go ahead, Joe Black.
Yeah. I just wanted to say that, you know, making this movie, we all worked very hard, you know, with De Niro, Pesci, and Chaz Palminteri, and we all became like family, you know, meeting on this scene and this, reading the scripts together. And we go to the 5-year anniversary, the 10-year anniversary, the 15-year anniversary. Like all the guys said, the 20-year, I'm trying to work on, you know, getting De Niro to have us come down there and maybe get Chaz to come down, all the guys at the Bronx Tale. And these guys worked very hard on their parts.
You can't say hard on the show either.
No, they worked hard on their parts.
Oh, okay.
They really worked hard. And we made this movie a classic.
Andy gets his...
We became family. And these guys are the original actors. They are. They're very good at what they did. You know, they came from tough neighborhoods, and they worked, they worked their rear ends off, you know.
And Squiggy also, we should give a shout out to him.
Yeah, Squiggy's at another table. He got another family.
Squiggy, you got a better offer. Bring Squiggy over.
Squiggy's at a
Squiggy. Get him in there.
Squiggy, grab a chair. Yeah, we're bringing in, we're pinch hitting Squiggy here. So Squiggy, were you leaving us for another family, or what's going on?
I'm just leaving.
Get closer to the microphone.
Uh-oh. Don't yell at me.
You just flew in from somewhere, I think.
Tampa.
From Tampa.
Yes, without a plane.
So, well, you were the one drinking at my bar mitzvah.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Good. Good. So, what were you doing? What sort of business were you transacting?
I wasn't doing anything. It's actually like 40 degrees I was over there. The swimming pool was frozen. It looked like an ice pond. It was 40 degrees. I went from here to there, and I left. It became 78. So there's got to be something wrong with either me.
Yeah, you're having a strange effect on the weather.
Yeah, exactly. But alcohol helps.
You're
a
cool
lot.
Guy, I guess, basically.
Basically, I'm the coolest guy you ever met.
Okay, now, now we don't want to leave out JoJo.
What about JoJo?
JoJo, who I understand is a fitness model as well.
Oh, that's
so. What did you did some work with Gary Null?
Null, the great Gary Null. Yes. Yeah. When I got the diagnosis from the doctor telling me that I had like 6 months, put my house in order, I didn't know what to do. They were telling me you got to cut out your stomach, you got to do this, you got to do that, you need a heart operation. I said, fellas, I can't shave. It takes me 3 hours to shave. I said, forget about operations. And that's
stop doing your legs, JoJo.
So, so somebody said, listen, what about that guy you used to listen to when you were younger? Because I was into powerlifting when I was a young man. And I started listening to Gary about vitamins and just to get stronger. And I said, I don't even know if this guy's still alive. And sure enough, I found him on a radio, and somebody gave me a gift of a juicer, and that's where it all started from there. 12 months later, like I said, it just snowballed. I did two videos with him. It's called It's Not Your Fault, You're Fat, and Getting Healthy Now with Gary Null.
So you're a juicer. So you're on the juice, basically.
Yes, I'm on the juice, the good juice.
Okay, very good. I juice myself.
And, and I'm serious about that group thing. I got this little group together called JoJo and the Whalers, and we do parties and stuff like that. We do everything from the 50s, 60s, and 80s.
No 70s?
Nah.
Were you guys away at that time?
I leave that up to Al. Alfred Sorcelli every year has a disco party at his house.
Okay,
and
so
that's the disco. That's the most disco I can't handle. I work in the club, and I can't handle that.
I could have had you at my party Friday. We had an 80s retro party at Culture Club.
There you go.
We had 600 people, but we could have squeezed you in, I think.
I think so. Why not? I'm slim and trim now. I'm down to 400 pounds.
Okay, that's no problem.
400.
So, Al, what is your 80s singing group? What is that about?
No, not 80s. It's just 70s, the classic
70s,
disco. Yeah, right. No, we just like to have a disco party.
Classic disco? Isn't classic that kind of like a... an oxymoron or something?
Well, I don't know about I get a friend that want to hear moron in a sentence that they're looking at me. But,
well, he said hard on before, so.
Oh, there you go.
It's like jumbo shrimp. It's the same.
Or military intelligence.
Yeah, yeah. It's a contradiction in terms.
You know, about the getting back to the movie, I just want to say that on that movie set, everybody was so respectful to one another. Mm-hmm. And the kids especially, the little kid, Frank Capra, I think is his name?
Francis Capra.
He was great. And Louis Venario and even all the other kids.
Joey D'Onofrio.
You know, they couldn't Joey D'Onofrio. Like, they were so respectful. I couldn't believe that. Like, you know, they would come to me every day. Hey, Jojo, you all right? Everything okay? You need anything? I'll get it. You know, and nobody concentrates on that. They all concentrate on the bad thing that happened with Lilo. And, you know, this Francis Cat, he's on so many things. I see him on TV all the time. He's, you know, he was on Laura Mars and this other thing. And, you know, he became a great actor, you know. And
so who was he? He was the one who played the little?
Yeah. Little C. As a matter of fact, yeah. I think he was the one that clinched the, because I became friends with that kid. Because when we used to sit outside the waiting room and I used to wear all different types of T-shirts with like Spider-Man on it and Venom and he was shocked that a guy my size, he said, you know Venom? You know, I said, yeah, I read Venom and this and that. And we became friends. And one day I was waiting outside the room for De Niro and Chaz to come out, and they were inside with the kid. And when the door opened up, the kid see me, and he turned around and he told Bob, he said, that's Jojo the Whale. And Bob said, no, not yet. We don't know yet. He said, no, that's Jojo the Whale.
I know.
So you were actually hired by this child.
By the child, yeah.
So well, 9-year-olds respect your talent. Yeah,
exactly, exactly. And, you know, it was just, you know, just a great time on that set. Everybody was so, everybody connected. It was just a time of, you know, it was great. It was like, you know.
Well, let's not forget the female lead, Kathy Narducci. She was Kathy Narducci. That was her first thing, too.
Who was this?
Sort of a Kathy Narducci, who played De Niro's wife. There were so many,
She was had a big part in The Sopranos, I think.
Yes,
she was the wife of Al.
Actually, she brought her
restaurant owner.
She brought her son for a part, which happened also, I think, to Danny Kaye, too. But we don't want to forget her either. He was a tremendous actor. And they went to bring their sons, you know, for the part, and they wind up getting the part. So it's just goes to show you how, you know, you have to be lucky, you know, but I think luck is the residue of design. Opportunity comes.
That is deep, Coffee Cake.
No, I think luck is the residue of design, meaning you can get lucky, but the opportunity, you have to have something there to take advantage of the opportunity. Capisce?
Yes, I do. Any parting words from you gentlemen? Well, Al, where will your band be singing next?
No, I don't have a band, but I tell you what I do have. I do have a restaurant called Chaz, a Bronx Original, partners with Chaz Palminteri.
Do you?
Down in the Inner Harbor in Baltimore. It's a great restaurant. It's fantastic. If you're ever down there to catch a Yankee game, it's called Chaz, a Bronx Original. You can Google it. We're going to have a guest down there by the name of Dave Frankie Coffee Cake. There'll be a,
really?
There'll be a website put up when he's going to be there signing autographs.
I might have to come down for that.
Yes.
My 80s band, I actually had a band in the 80s, and we played in Baltimore.
Well, there you go.
Before your time.
Harbor East.
Just when you were a youngster.
That's a youngster. Andy, thank you.
As a group, I'd like to thank you for having us as guests. And we appreciate it. If you ever want to do a show down the future, I'm sure there's some stuff we haven't told yet.
I'm looking forward to it.
But Andy, I want to touch on again what we kept hitting on through this whole
hour.
Don't
touch me.
No, I'm not going to touch you. But maybe Freddie will do that. But anyway, it's just amazing again how we all came together on this movie, which the people don't know, and they'll never know just how we stay connected.
I feel left out. Where was my role?
Really.
What about me?
Talk to Sony.
Like Freddie said, all the kids, everybody from the main guy on down.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay. That was today's show, and we are going to be back. Not yet. But for now, we are gone. Joe Black, you have something to say before we go?
Yes, I just wanted to say we keep going, the movie going, Chaz Palminteri never forgot the neighborhood. They opened up a wonderful restaurant in Baltimore. We're going to make a drop there, all the actors, and we want to get down at De Niro's office for the 20th anniversary. We love each other. We became family.
Okay. That's Joe Black. We're gone.
You are listening to the Centani Broadcasting Network. CENTANI Broadcasting.com in high definition digital stereo.